This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
This episode contains explicit language. Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, April 14th. The College Indecision Edition. I'm Zach Rosen. I host another show. It's called The Best Advice Show, featuring your best advice. I live in Detroit with my family. Noah is 4, and my son Ami is 1.
I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog, Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom to 3 littles, Henry who's 10, Oliver who's 7, and Teddy who's 5. And we live in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Today on the show, we're talking about one of the most stressful decisions in a teen's life. Should you go to college? And if so, where? We've got a letter about a teen who is stuck trying to decide between 2 schools. How can you help your teen decide when the decision is more complicated than which one do you like best? Then on Slate Plus, we're talking about Passover and Easter traditions in our homes. Here's a sneak peek if you do have Slate Plus. We start at like 9:30 and like we're done at like 1-2 in the morning. And I grew up, you know, doing like a 45-minute like brisk Seder yeah. with my family. You know, we're out by 7:45, you know, and I'm probably turning on the TV
highlights.
At 8.
Yeah.
But this is a whole new thing and it's actually really fun. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll dive into our triumphs and fails of the week.
Talking about money can be so hard, especially when the person you're talking to is still learning how to do long division. That's why Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace, is here to help. I'm Bridget, and with my fellow co-host Ryan, we help teach your little ones about complex topics like bankruptcy, climate change, and why there's so much gold at Fort Knox, and so much more. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're new to our show, welcome. Whether you're a parent, educator, or just interested in this wild journey, we're so glad to have you. Here on Mom and Dad Are Fighting, we share our parenting triumphs and fails, offer some advice, and share recommendations of things we love. We're here twice a week on Monday and Thursday, so subscribe to never miss an episode.
Okay, let's move on to some parenting stories. Elizabeth, what do you got for us this week?
Okay, so Henry's birthday was last week, and so we threw him a birthday party, which, of course, because of COVID, we haven't done. And then also, we have this weird thing where, like, because we move, there are years in which we arrive and don't know anyone. So on the years where he has a lot of friends or we're someplace where we can do something, we try to really do that. So this year, of course, he's in school. He has all these friends. He wanted to have a scavenger hunt. So Jeff and I put together a list of challenges for the kids to do around this cool mountain town called Manitou Springs. And it was such a joy. You know, I'm always worried when we plan these things and they're 10, like, are they going to be too cool? Are they going to be embarrassed? But we had the most wonderful group of children, and they did things like run a city block with a balloon between their legs. They performed an impromptu concert of Encanto for strangers. They sang with a marshmallow in their mouth. Like that, we had different stores they had to go to. There's a little arcade. We gave them each 4 quarters, and they had to earn 30 tickets total. And one of the kids put it in one of those claw machines and got 200 tickets, and the whole group erupted. And they were like, now we can use our quarters for whatever we want.
That's an exciting moment.
It was
children's
amazing.
Lottery.
It was so silly. We bought those huge white undershirts and just had the kids cut them with scissors and decorate them and tie them and wear all these funny headbands and mustaches. It was hysterical. Everyone in the town was so kind, like people were happy to participate and get out of the way. It just was really fun. But when we first put the party together. I told Henry he could invite 10 friends because I thought, okay, I can handle 10 10-year-olds. We wanted to do one group because I thought teams may end up with hurt feelings. So this is about what we can handle. And there were sort of like the usual suspects and then a couple kids that I didn't know very well. Now, there's only 78 kids in his class and I volunteer there. So I know a lot of the kids, like I've almost heard of everyone. And we had one little boy come to the party who I didn't know very well. And I feel like now we've blossomed this new friendship, which is awesome. And his mom was great. So I was like, woohoo. So he invited 3 boys and the rest are girls. There were 2 girls that he invited that I didn't know very well. And like a week before the party, I still hadn't heard from them, like from their parents at all. So I texted their parents and just said, hey, I don't know if the invitation like came home or what you're thinking. I just need to prepare. And weirdly, they both texted me back with something to the effect of, we don't let our kids go to boys' birthday parties. And I was like, what?
Is that all they said?
That's literally what they texted me back. Like, we have a rule against going to boys' birthday parties. And I thought, well, first, why would you tell me that? Just tell me they can't come. There are a million reasons why you couldn't come. So that was weird.
Yeah.
2, then I start like, you know, I can't let go of these things. I just start thinking like, well, it's the middle of the day party. Like, I understand if maybe we were having some kind of night thing or something in the evening. Like, maybe, I mean, again, they're 10. They're obviously supervised. It's like, what is the problem?
Yeah.
But then I just started to get, not like angry, but kind of that we want boys kind of generally to be more in tune with the plight of women or, you know, other people other than just boys. Mm-hmm. But if they aren't ever friends or around them, or we can't have like shared fun experiences, if everything has to be like, this is a boys thing, this is a girls thing, we're not going to get there. And I just feel like I don't have girls, so maybe, I don't know. I was really bothered by it, Zach.
Would it be worth asking, like, hey, I was just curious, like, where you're coming from with your rule?
These are people that my son does play with at school. Like, Henry, it's not like he chose 2 random people or 2 very, you know, popular people. I have a friend who always tries to put herself in their shoes. And so I thought, like, well, maybe they thought everyone in the class was invited. And so their rule is sort of like, well, we can't do that many birthday parties. But again, I just come back to, it feels like because they told me the reason that it feels like a slap on the wrist to me. You know what I mean? Like, how dare you invite girls?
No, don't. I mean, I don't want to tell you how to feel, but that's not a slap to you.
The vindictive piece of me is like, I hope they heard how fun the party was.
Sounds anyway. Like a really good party.
They missed out.
Big time. They're the suckers.
How was your week, though?
We had 2 really great days this past weekend featuring play dates with multiple families each day. And that's where my story is from. We were over at a friend's house on Saturday. There's 3 families there, each with 2 kids in their family, so 6 kids. And Noah was really into playing with this older girl who's like 8. I think Noah's usually does really well with older kids. And they were playing jump rope, and at one point, we told Noah, like, okay, now it's time to share with this other girl because you've had your minute or whatever. Now it's her time, and Noah just broke down. She was crying. She couldn't speak. She was just at a loss for words and just feeling her feelings big time. I was feeling a little embarrassed that like she lost her shit like that. I don't like to admit it, but it's true. It wasn't entirely clear like why she was crying, but she was. I figured it had something to do with the sharing. She did recover, you know, 10 minutes later or something, or maybe even less than 10 minutes later, and the rest of the play date was fine. But then on the way home, after she had recovered, we were listening to music in the car. You know, we weren't facing each other. She was just in her seat. I was driving, and I just turned the music down for a minute, and I was just like, Noah, what happened back there? Why were you so upset? And she just said something, you know, like, I felt like I didn't have a long enough turn and I didn't want to share in that moment. And I was like, oh my God, that's totally legit that you were feeling like that. Like, I totally get that. We didn't know what you needed or what you wanted because, you know, you were crying. And had you been able to say that, you could have totally jump roped for another minute. And I'm sure this older kid would have understood. So yeah. I just want you to know that, like, it's okay if you're feeling not ready to give up, you know, the thing yet, just as long as you are planning on sharing, you know, soon thereafter. And just if you could, you know, maybe next time try to, you know, just express what you're feeling. She's like, okay. And then sure enough, we went to a different play date on Sunday the following day, again with an older kid, not the same kid, but another older kid who's maybe six. And they were going back and forth on the swing. And I went over there. I could tell like that Noah wasn't quite ready to give up the swing. And I was like, Noah, you know, this other kid wants to have a turn. Can you give him a turn? She's like, how about in 1 minute? And the older kid was okay with that. And I was like, that's great. And I just saw within like 24 hours, there was some emotional evolution. And I was so proud of her for, you know, having gone through the thing on Saturday, processed it a little bit later, and then enacted this pivot on Sunday. I thought it was beautiful. And I was really proud of her.
That's great. It's great, too, that she gets the like feedback right away. Like when we have a talk about something, I always kind of hope the opportunity presents itself again to say, like, I'm also going to do my part, right? Like, if you say I need another minute, I'm going to help you get one more minute and then do the nice transition so that you can see.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah.
We'll see if it sticks.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll report back.
No, I really do think that's great. Kids are so amazing in that way, right? Like, I think the thing is sometimes we don't even catch those moments because maybe there was another moment that was sort of like, ugh, like, how do they have to learn all this? But they do have to learn. They have to learn to ask for what they need. And sometimes we as parents like step in because we see that this other kid wants to do it. And we're kind of saying like, be a good friend, you know, but the best way to be a friend is to say like, well, I need one more minute.
Yeah.
And then I am going to play with you on the swing and I will feel like I have finished. And I understand that I can go again after that. You know, I hope you gave yourself a pat on the back too. Like I was so calm.
I felt pretty good about that one. We're going to take another break, and when we come back, we'll get into today's listener question. We are back and joined by Heidi Strom Moon. She is the director of subscriptions here at Slate and is the parent to a soon-to-be college-bound kid. Welcome to the show, Heidi.
Thanks for having me.
Is this a surreal moment to have a kid that's almost in college?
Very surreal. It's been a long process. I mean, she started thinking about places she was interested in back in middle school, which I thought was a little bit early. But we started in earnest sophomore year. It's when we took our first college tour, literally the week before everything shut down in March of 2020. And it's been a 2-year process ever since.
Wow.
It's definitely a lot more involved and challenging than it ever was when I went through this a million years ago. So I'm really happy to be getting to the other side of it.
Yeah, well, we're excited to get your insight today. Let's listen to this listener question.
Dear Mom and Dad, my son is a senior in high school and is having a hard time deciding where he wants to go to school this fall. His mother and I have tried our best to be supportive without being too overbearing. We provided feedback on his application essays when he asked. We helped quiz him for the SATs. We went on school tours, though those were fairly recent due to COVID. He applied to most of the schools he was interested in without checking them out first. So here's our current dilemma. My son has his heart set on being an engineer and has been eyeing a top program. We knew that school would be a bit of a reach both academically and fiscally, so he was sure to apply to multiple schools. He got 2 acceptance letters this fall, one of which is his second choice school. It's our state school, which is somewhat close to home, and quite a few of his high school classmates will be headed there this fall. It's got a decent program, and he received a nice scholarship offer. However, his acceptance letter from his number one school arrived last week. Slam dunk, right? Well, not exactly. His scholarship offer wasn't as strong, so attending would require him to take out significantly more student loans. It's definitely a more competitive school. He'd be living halfway across the country, which didn't bother him before, but now that graduation is around the corner, he's starting to have some reservations about making new friends. What can I do to make this decision easier? In some ways, he's an adult and can make this decision on his own. But on the other hand, he's only 18. It's such a big step that will impact the next 4 years and ultimately his career. Was there anything that your parents did to help you come to a decision and ultimately prepare you for this transition? Thank you. Decisions, decisions.
How did this make you feel hearing this, Heidi?
It sounds really familiar. So it's definitely a difficult decision, and I empathize with these parents. My daughter's making a very similar choice right now. The deadline to submit your deposit to accept a spot in schools is typically May 1st or May 2nd, so it's coming up really fast. So my daughter was accepted in the fall by an excellent school that's a few miles away, sort of similar situation where it's pretty close to home. She was hoping to go away, but at the same time, she was deferred by her number one choice, which is located in another state. And she just got the acceptance to that number one choice a couple of weeks ago. And so in our case, both schools have a similar cost of attendance. So her choice is more about the other factors of the two schools. So being close to home versus striking out on your own, what the campus culture is like, internship opportunities, and all those kinds of things. So she made a pros and cons list for each university as a way to help her evaluate the two. And I think it's ultimately going to come down to, when she closes her eyes, where can she picture herself? Like, which one feels more like her? But I also know what it's like to make a decision based on cost. That was my experience when I was applying to college a long time ago. So I also had to choose between my state university, which would have cost significantly less, and a private out-of-state institution that gave me a scholarship but did cost a bit more overall. And so I sat down with my parents, and we figured out what the two financial aid packages looked like and how much debt I would need to take on to go to the private school. So I would strongly suggest that you start there. It sounds like you're thinking about that already, but this is not a small thing. I mean, you say the loans are significant. How significant are they? How long will they take to pay off? How much does he expect to make after graduation? You know, engineering pays pretty well, so that might be part of the equation. So this is a lot less fun than thinking about all of the other things that make school so exciting. But as my colleague Rachel Hampton has written about and others have, taking on significant student loan debt can have serious consequences for years after graduation. I mean, so much so that the Department of Education just announced they're extending the pause on federal student loan repayments through the end of August.
It sort of goes beyond just, do I take out these loans, right? I mean, there are real consequences to these that last far beyond these 4 years, which, yes, they are a important 4 years, but are they important enough to crash the next 8 years? And things like, is it going to influence the type of job you can take after, you know, you graduate? Would it have been better to be closer to top of the class at a really good school that you got into versus being middle of the class at a more expensive but more prestigious school? In our heads is like, we got to go to the best school, but there's so much out there that kind of says it actually doesn't really matter at some level what the name of that school is. Now sometimes it does matter. We had a guest, it was the College Sticker Shock Edition show, and we had New York Times columnist Ron Lieber on the show to talk about his book, The Price You Pay for College. And we talked about some of these factors that, like, what actually are you paying for? And I guess I kind of have a question for you about, how have you talked to your daughter about this decision? Like, how much pressure are you putting on her one way or the other? How much are you leading the discussion? I'm really interested in how that's going at your house.
Well, first of all, that is an excellent book. That is a book that I read. And also pointed me to another book I would recommend that I think we're going to put in the show notes. I think it's called How to Pay for College. One thing I'll say, I'm sorry it won't help this parent because they're at the end of their process, but again, I can't give them a time machine. But for anybody listening out there who's got kids who are younger than you think you should be thinking about how to pay for college, you cannot start too soon. There are things that you can do with financial planning that make your position when you fill out the financial aid forms, the infamous FAFSA, that determines what colleges will offer you in terms of financial aid. And you can go through the exercise of figuring out what you look like in that form and what you might be expected to pay long before you're in the process of winnowing schools down. So I would say figure out what your position is financially before you start to put together the list of schools that your kid is thinking about applying to, and be really clear-headed about what you can and can't afford to do and what choices might have to be made, so that you've talked about that before you get to the point of they've applied to their dream school, they've gotten in, and now you've gotten this financial aid report back, and there's no way it's going to happen, and you have to have a really difficult discussion. I mean, every college website also has, I think they're required by law to have something called the true cost calculator. You have to tell people a lot of information about yourself you never dreamed you would to do a lot of these forms. And so you can get a pretty clear-eyed idea long before application of how much you might actually be expected to pay towards the cost of the college. And so that can help you narrow down those decisions. For us, so I've been trying not to influence her decision and let her decide for herself. And my husband's definitely better at that than I am. I think she can kind of tell which school I prefer.
No shame. It's that mom.
I know. It's like, you know, it would be a dream if she went there. I mean, both schools are great, but one of them's super wow. She's really good about talking to me, and we've had a lot of conversations back and forth about how does this feel? What do you think about this culture at this school versus that one? They have some clear differences. And just letting her express what she thinks about it and giving her my honest feedback. And I think that's been pretty successful. So she's away on a spring break trip this week. And I think when she gets back, we'll have a final decision. It feels like a reality game show. What have you decided? And then it'll be time to put some money down. And then it gets real.
Then it gets real. I mean, the good news is that you only know what you decide, unless, of course, you change your mind, which you can. Changing your mind is not without cost and difficulty. But also this idea that we force these 18-year-olds to, like, make this decision. We say, like, this is going to define the rest of your life. Like, yeah, it's important, but it is not game-ending important. And if you get somewhere and it is a bad fit, there are things you can do. I think my parents did a really nice job of talking to me about good fit and not getting hyped up about what other people were doing. I ended up going to a women's college, which was a wonderful fit for me, right next to Notre Dame. So I had kind of that big school feeling. I got to go to football games, do all of that, but I got to be in a smaller environment, which is really what I needed and allowed me to grow. And my parents never pushed that on me, but really did say, like, well, what do you want these 4 years to look like? Like, how do you think you grow the best? What kind of ways do you want to grow? What kind of opportunities do you want? I think for the letter writer, the one thing that you can do, though, if it comes down to just, I want to go, but it feels far away. And the only reason that far away is obviously far away comes with financials of traveling back and forth, you not being there as readily. But if the only reason is that you're worried about that, I think that is a place where you can push them and say, you are 18 and you can go experience this and you can always come back, but it might be nice to try something different.
I'm an introvert who went like 3,000 miles away for school. I made friends. It'll be fine.
College is, that's like the beauty of college. There is someone there that you will like. just keep trying to find someone. Zach, what are you thinking about this?
I agree that, like, if you make the wrong choice, you can totally transfer. Like, that's a very common thing. To complicate that thought, though, I think back to my first semester in college where I went somewhere where most of my friends didn't go. I barely knew anyone at my college. And I was, like, pretty depressed my first semester. And I think, like, I could have gone home, but I stuck it out. And by the end of my first year, I was so glad that I did. And so just in terms of, like, yes, you can change your mind, which you totally can. I might give it a year instead of a semester, but that's, you know, completely anecdotal subjective advice for me. I am curious of a couple things, Heidi. One is, you said your husband has been pretty good at being not too imposing with this thing. Like, what is it that he does well in those moments?
I don't know. I guess he just has a better poker face. She also just, I think, because of the mother-daughter relationship, like, talks to me more. So there's just more opportunities for me to share what I'm thinking. And so it just naturally kind of reveals, I think, what my leanings might be.
Mm-hmm. How early did you start to put money away? And how did you do it, if I may ask? Like, what mechanism?
Birth.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. We my husband's really good about, like, sort of long-term financial planning, and he'd been aware even before we were due to have a kid that of the state programs, the prepaid college programs that every state has. And so that was kind of the first thing we did, is when she was born, I think you have to have a social security number before you can open an account, and just started with that as, like, the first thing that we did.
And then did you branch out to, like, a 529 or something?
Yeah, we've did some of that too. Again, you know, she's 18 now, so it's been a while, but there was actually had a credit card for a while called UPromise, and instead of getting cash back or points back, it put money towards a 529 Sallie Mae. So I had that card for a while, so that was another way that we were contributing.
That's really helpful. Thanks.
You obviously informed your daughter about some of these things, but is the messaging at school about college applications talking about how to weigh cost or how to find good fit, or like, is any of that kind of education happening?
I mean, I think that college and career offices tried to offer a lot of different things. They mostly are arranging sort of like campus visits from different institutions. Our local PTSA arranged for a local college counselor to present a series of, it was like an 8-week series that he offers as a course that people can attend, and it had a lot about fit in it and the financial aid process and all of that information. I found that really helpful.
One of the things when we interviewed Ron Lieber was talking about sort of these college visits and understanding you're buying into this environment. How important did you think, though, the campus visits were?
It's tricky because obviously that incurs expense. Not everyone can afford to make all these college visits. I mean, we were lucky that we were able to do that. We had some like points that we could use and ways that we could buy plane tickets. And I was glad that we were able to do that when stuff kind of reopened last summer. It was good timing for us. It was after her junior year. And so it really helped to just like be in the city and on the campus and get a feel for the place and really understand more about it that you just couldn't have gotten from like a Zoom tour or a website or whatever. Good luck to everyone out there. It's a it is such a challenging process. It's night and day from when I went through it. I mean, we didn't do college visits when I was in high school. I don't even remember that being a thing. So it's, I mean, a lot of it's been a learning experience for us as parents too, because we can't draw on our past experience to have any kind of understanding of how it was going to work this time. We had to figure it out as we went along.
Yeah. Well, decisions. We hope this helped. Please let us know what he decides. Everyone else, if you have a question for us, email us at momanddad@slate.com. Heidi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
And that's it for our show. We'll be back in your feeds bright and early on Monday with some more conundrums and recommendations. Subscribe to our feed so you don't miss it. Also, if you rely on this show for parenting advice, consider signing up for Slate Plus. It's the best way to support this show. Members will never hear another ad on our podcast or any other Slate podcast, and you'll get bonus content on this show and your other Slate favorites. To sign up now, go to slate.com/momanddadplus. Again, that's slate.com/momanddadplus. This episode of Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson and Jasmine Ellis. For Elizabeth Newcamp, I'm Zach Rosen. Thanks for listening.